Blog Talk Radio.
Gotta oil that thing. Good evening and welcome to Eerie House Radio. Dale K here from Spook Show, accompanied by
Dave Bigley from Weirdest Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One.
And here, we're here with
just each other. Yeah.
Yep.
So far.
Never know what happens throughout the course of the evening. Good old Bob, welcome to the chat. I am sure others on the way, plus them what we can't see. Thanks for joining us. Sorry you won't be able to see us tonight, though, because we're going invisible.
No.
We thought about doing a show about invisibility, and I just can't see it.
Yep, it's my fault. I looked at the eclipse, and now I can't see anything.
Yep. So, invisibility, a useful skill, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, unless everyone was invisible, then it wouldn't be such a great skill to have, would it? If everyone could be invisible, then being visible would be the trick.
Okay, fair enough. but you don't have to worry about wardrobe malfunctions if you're invisible. Fugsbane joins us here. Hey, welcome. Hi.
Hey, Fugs, and hey, good old Bob. I hope you can see your way through to this show with the visibility, but we got some cool shows here tonight.
Yeah, we do. We got Mysterious Traveler, Sue Spence, and perhaps not surprisingly, The Shadow.
Yeah. But the shell and challenge, actually, could there be two shadows? You know, could it be me and my shadow and my shadow? Ted Lewis, me and my shadow and shadow.
Yeah, and only one of them knows for sure.
Yep, and he ain't telling right now.
No, that'll all be revealed later this evening.
Could be. So did you take a chance to look at the eclipse there, Dale, on Monday?
No. Not at the exact moment. I didn't get to see, like, the corona action. I had special goggles. They worked. I can still see. Well, for now. You never know what might happen throughout the show. Dave knows what I mean. It could go out like that, baby. Anyway, I saw just about full from each side. Being as I was working, I had to kind of time things, and I got caught up in a job, so I didn't get to see it right at the very moment of totality. But I'll just wait like 20 years.
You can wait. I ain't waiting for that. But actually, I did. I took a.
Hey, yes,
I worked
you are.
From home also.
Yes,
I worked
you are.
From
You're
going
to be right here.
Well, that doesn't mean I'm not going to be alive, but it doesn't mean I'm not going to be here either. You know. Mm. We'll have a lot of ghost stories then. Yeah. Anyway, I also worked from home, but I did take a break during that time and went out, and we went, my wife and I went to the backyard and was able to see it. It was really a unique experience. Yeah. So.
No, I'm glad you got to enjoy it. If you think about it, somewhere in the universe, or not really that far out, somewhere in the solar system, like near our orbit, there is always a total eclipse. If you follow the moon at the right angle from the right distance, there's always a solar eclipse.
Yeah, and it happens actually quite frequently, but a lot of times it's over the ocean, so nobody really sees it except maybe the Navy or something, you know. But it does happen a lot more often than people think. It's going to be next one's down in Brazil or something like that. But I don't have a passport, so I'm not going down there.
And Gar got stuck in an extra long game of life, so he will not be joining us this evening.
Yeah. Yeah.
Uh, But he left us some morals, so we get to plagiarize the hell out of those.
And why not? And why not indeed?
No, we give it's not plagiarism. We give credit where credit is due.
Yeah, sort of. Sure. You bet.
I freely admit the morals I've had to come up with on the last second really stink. I've come to grips with that.
I would say every once in a while I hit one, but that's only every once in a while. So that's okay.
There you go. Oh, you've hit on a few good ones. Quite a few. We got, what are we going to, I don't know, where do you want to start today?
You know what? Why don't we start with a friend of Shadow? And we know he has the secret of invisibility, but I think there's a little bit more going on than that in this particular episode.
Do tell. It's called the Shadow Challenge, which might give us some insight.
And that's episode number 211, and comes to us from October 19th of 1940, and one.
Ooh. Does?
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The Shadow knows.
The thrilling adventures of the Shadow are on the air, brought to you each week by the Blue Coal Dealers of America. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. While they set the stage for today's Shadow Drama, let me ask you a brief but vital question. Have you heard about the new easy three-way plan for better home heating? It's the Blue Coal plan, with the accent on convenience, economy, and comfort. Blue coal in your furnace means a steady-burning, longer-lasting fire that heats your home comfortably from cellar to attic. Next time you order fuel, insist upon Blue Coal. Your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer will be glad to explain his three-way plan for better home heating. Phone him tomorrow, won't you? The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. As the Shadow, Cranston is gifted with hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Shadow Challenge.
No, I can't speak to him. And please don't put more calls through, operator. I'm busy working and I don't wish to be disturbed. Thank you. Now, let me see. Where was I? Oh, yes. What was that?
I'm sorry to interrupt your work, Professor Rice.
Who is that? Who is speaking? I see no one.
I am called the Shadow.
The Shadow? I've heard of you. What are you doing here?
That manuscript you're translating, Professor Rice. It is of great value, is it not?
Yes, of course.
I want you to give it to me, Professor.
Give you this manuscript? Why, that's impossible. It's not mine. It belongs to the museum. It's a direct key to ancient Hindu culture.
I know. That's why I've come here. I want that manuscript.
Now, see here. I've always had a great respect for you, Shadow. You work for the forces of good against the forces of evil. But now, you're behaving like a common thief.
Give me that manuscript.
No, no.
Very well. I see that I must use other methods.
What do you mean? What are you going to do?
This is what I'm going to do, Professor Rice.
Shadow. Why did you do this?
Oh, Mont Cranston, to think that I believed you all these years and you told me what a golfer you were.
Oh, I just had an off day, that's all, Margot. Even the best of his experience, though. Besides, I'm not used to playing in the sun.
You weren't in the sun. You were in a nice, shady wood. You never saw the fairway all day.
All right, you win.
Do we have time for a swim?
I think so.
Oh, good.
I've got to vindicate my athletic ability in some fashion. Don't you ever change that headline down here?
Well, not till I think of a better one. Paper, mister.
All right, here you are.
Thank you. It's the entire northern state buried by snowstorm. Read all about it.
Well, how bad was the storm? How many feet of snow?
Margo, you're talking like a tourist. All they need is a flurry up north to cause a headline like this.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure. You get used to these headlines after you hear. Margo.
What?
Margo, look at this.
What is it?
The story on the front page. Museum professor murdered by the shadow.
By the shadow?
Well, that's what it says. Professor Rice of the Cosmopolitan Museum was found dying in his apartment late this evening by the police. In a deathbed statement to Commissioner Weston, he described his assailant as an invisible man who called himself the Shadow.
Well, Lamont, that's impossible. How do you explain it?
I have no explanation. But one thing is certain. We're catching the next plane north. And you say, Commissioner Weston, that the dying man swore that his assailant was the Shadow?
That's right.
Well, somehow I can't believe that.
Now, look, Miss Lane, facts are facts.
Well, what Margot means, Commissioner, is that she can't believe that the Shadow would do such a thing.
Well, that's her opinion. Me, I think different.
What do you mean?
I've always suspected that the Shadow was a criminal at heart.
Why?
Otherwise, why would he always remain invisible? Oh, I tell you, he's a bad egg, and this murder confirms it.
This manuscript, Commissioner, the one that the killer stole from Professor Rice, what do you know about it?
Well, it's something that the professor was working on. Rice and three other scholars are employed by the Cosmopolitan Museum, specializing in, restoration and recreation of ancient Hindu culture.
Yes, I'm acquainted with all of them and their work.
Well, you probably know more about it than I do. Anyway, this manuscript was very valuable to them.
But what value would it have to anyone else?
That's out of the department, Miss Lane. My job is, who put it to the corpus delicti? In other words, who killed Professor Rice? The answer to that is the Shadow.
And the motive?
Larceny, my friend. Good old-fashioned larceny. Shadow wanted that manuscript, and he killed the guy to get it.
Commissioner, I don't think that the Shadow had anything to do with it.
Look, I heard the accusation with my own ears just before the erstwhile Professor Rice gave up the ghost.
Nevertheless, I can't believe the Shadow was guilty, and I hope to be able to prove my point.
How?
Well, with your permission, I'd like to go to the museum and talk to Professor Rice's associates, see what I can learn.
Go ahead. Go ahead, my friend.
We'll leave the car here, Margo. I believe that the night entrance to the museum is in this wing.
Lamont, do you suppose that discovered your secret and is misusing it in the Shadow's name?
That's possible, Margo.
Well, what else could it be?
Well, perhaps Weston is putting the blame of the crime on the Shadow to excuse his department's inability to solve the murder.
Oh, Lamont, what a horrible thing to do.
Well, that's just a supposition, Margo. Well, here we are. We have to ring for the watchman.
What do you expect to find out here, Lamont?
Well, I want to talk to the other professors and find out more about the missing manuscript.
Yes? What is it?
Oh, good evening. We wish to see either Professor Carter or Hagen or Professor Amund.
Yes?
I know they're working here this evening.
Are you expected?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Oh. Well, come in. We seldom have visitors at this late hour.
Well, I guess not.
I must ask you to walk quietly, please. They do not like to be disturbed.
You mean the professors?
Oh, no, not the professors. I mean those that live here.
Oh, are there people there?
This is their time to rest. Who? Those that you see about you, the statues, the paintings, tires, and you know, people staring at them through the day.
Oh, yes. Yes, I can understand that.
Lamont, does he mean...
Margo, the statues must appreciate your consideration for them, sir.
Oh, yes, yes, they do. They know that I watch over them through the night. And there is the door to the office.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yes. Yes, it was nice of you to show us the way.
Not at all. Good night.
Good night.
Yes. Good night. Cheerful fellow. Makes you feel right at home.
Well, let's go in, Margo.
Oh. Oh. It's you, Mr. Cranston.
I didn't expect to see anyone.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is Miss Lane, Professor Carter.
How do you do?
How do you do, Miss Lane? Won't you go into the office? Professor Armand is there. I have to consult a file. I'll be right back.
Oh, yes. Thanks, Professor Carter. Well, come along, Mother.
All right.
May we come in?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course, Mr. Cranston. Do come in.
Thank you. I don't believe you know Miss Lane.
No, I have never had the pleasure.
This is Professor Armand, Margot.
How do you do, Professor?
I am most delighted to make your acquaintance. Won't you both be seated?
Thank you.
Thank you. I spoke to Professor Hagen this afternoon. Did he explain to you the purpose of my visit?
Yes, he did. You are interested, I believe, in solving the murder of our most worthy colleague, Professor Rice.
Yes.
A very noble endeavor.
I thought I might begin by learning more about the manuscript that Professor Rice was working on when he was killed.
An excellent beginning.
Yes. What was its value, Professor Almond?
The missing manuscript was quite priceless in rarity, but its monetary value was slight indeed because any attempt to resell it would bring immediate arrest.
Well, Professor, what was in the manuscript?
I must confess that I do not know. You see, it was one section of a single volume that the four of us were translating.
The work deals with ancient Hindu culture, doesn't it?
Yes.
Would it by any chance contain any secrets of that civilization which could be of value to someone today?
I fear that I am not at liberty to answer that question, Mr. Cranston. Perhaps Professor Hagen might be of greater service to you. He is our superior, you know.
Where is the professor?
He's working in the laboratory upstairs. I shall be most willing to go up and get him for you.
But can't you possibly...
I shall return in a moment with Professor Hagen. You will excuse me, Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston. Thank you.
Yes.
Well, my Hindu friend didn't appear to be too willing to talk.
No. I believe he knows much more than he can to tell.
Lamont, I wonder if... Should we answer it?
Well, I suppose I'd better. Hello?
To whom am I speaking?
This is Lamont Cranston.
Oh, then I can leave my message with you.
Certainly. What is it?
Of the three men who once were four, one more is about to die.
Who is this? Who's speaking?
The Shadow.
The Shadow? Hello? Hello?
What's the matter, Lamont?
That person on the phone called himself the Shadow.
Then there is an imprisonment.
Yes.
I'm sorry to be so long.
Oh, Professor Carter, someone just called on the phone. He said that one of you three professors is about to die.
What?
It might be a crank, but we can't take any chances.
Where are the others?
Upstairs in the laboratory. You'd better take us up there at once.
Oh, yes. Follow me. Up these stairs.
Come along, Margo.
I can't imagine who's...
There's trouble up there. Hurry, Carter.
It sounds like I'm at point. Move right in here.
What's wrong at...
Oh!
Oh, Margo, you better stay out of here. Not a pleasant sight.
Ahmed, what happened? What happened to Professor Hagen?
I found him so on the floor, dying.
Oh.
Was he still alive when you got here?
Yes.
Could he talk to you? Did you learn anything?
Yes. He told me that his attacker was an invisible man who called himself the Shadow.
Well, Margot, we now have definite proof that someone is impersonating the Shadow.
Yes, Lamont, but what can you do about it?
Don't worry, Margot. I've always used the power of the Shadow to aid the forces of law and order, to help good conquer evil.
Yes, I know.
And now that someone else has discovered my secret of invisibility and is misusing this power, I shall travel to the ends of the earth to conquer him. This, Margot, is the Shadow's greatest challenge. But I'm sure that I can meet it and come out on top.
We'll find out how the Shadow meets his challenge in just a moment. But first, are you running your home on a budget plan? If you are, then every penny counts. And you can save not only pennies, but dollars by heating your home with Blue Coal. Yes, any way you look at it, Blue Coal gives you more for your money. It burns better, lasts longer, distributes dependable, healthful heat that will cut down your heating costs. And no wonder. You see, Blue Coal is America's finest hard coal. It comes from the heart of the northern Pennsylvania anthracite fields, thousands of feet below the surface, where only the choicest hard coal is mined. What's more, with every order of Blue Coal, you enjoy the extra home heating service and free advice of your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer. He'll give you a free demonstration of the Blue Coal Automatic Heat Regulator. Just as its name implies, the Blue Coal Automatic Heat Regulator regulates the heat in your home by operating furnace dampers automatically. You simply set the thermostat, and the heat regulator does the rest. Blue Coal and the Blue Coal Heat Regulator work together with clock-like precision to increase your comfort and reduce wasted fuel.
Oh, that was
Ask your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer about this modern way to heat your home. His name is listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the word Blue Coal. Call him tomorrow.
Blue Coal, guys.
Well, then it sure ain't nothing gay to
No, and...
Hey,
and
Gar joins us here on Erie House Radio. Gar, you
will.
Does
he know?
That's why I say, man, it's just, it ain't nothing in Gainesville no more. No fun, nothing to do. And you know what? I'm so sick. I got some of the plumbing issue going on in my house.
Yeah.
Well, and I got to find me some homeowner insurance. It canceled me. They wouldn't even renew it on March 29th. So, I had to find some more. It's hard to find because they say they don't want to insure anything 2004 and over. And then when I back in 2017, I made a complaint to my insurance, but I didn't.
I think it calls for a mute button there, Dale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of weird there.
That was kind of weird.
That's Gar, and God only knows what he's up to, but we'll find out shortly. I'm sure. But
yeah.
We do know.
Oh. Yes.
We've got a good episode of The Shadow going on here.
Yeah.
An imposter.
Shadow usually, yep. And imposter's not good. I mean, that's almost as bad as identity theft. You know what's happening to the shadow there? And I know because somebody stole my identity once, and then 2 weeks later they brought it back, said I was boring. So that was it for that. Yeah.
Same thing happened to me, Dave, and I got a note back when I got my identity back. It's like, we ain't paying for this crap. We're not doing that. No. You're in over your head, boy. Let's check Gar's microphone and see if he's still walking through the...
So, if you want to say with another AFM, it's insurance.
Gar, are you in the drive-thru?
So if you're related
hey,
to
or a surprise for me,
Gar. They can work it out.
I've been trying, and so then now...
And they recover you.
This is great. I think he's at a drive-thru or something.
November, I had a big leakage in the house.
Mm-hmm.
It leaked from the hall, the bathroom
fun.
In the hall, to the bedroom adjoining to the wall and into the master bathroom. Mm-hmm. So the guy told me he said, I think it may be coming because he couldn't figure out where it was coming from the air conditioning. And so then we found out.
Soap opera.
Yeah, we'll be back to the adventures of Gar. I'm beginning to understand a little bit when he said, life has gotten in the way.
Yep, that's true. Yep.
This is going to require some explanation, but that's okay. We've got more of the shadow. Let's wrap up this tale and find out what he does about this imposter on
the
Shadow Challenged.
And now, back to the shadow.
Challenge.
Come on. Have you uncovered any clues? Any leads as to the identity of this person who's masquerading as a shadow?
Nothing important, no. In the past 12 hours, I've received two mysterious unsigned messages.
Really? What about?
I'll read you one of them. It says, why don't you inquire into the jealousy of the four who now are two?
Does that refer to the four professors?
Yes. And I learned that it's quite true. A great jealousy existed. All four men, although they worked together, were constantly vying with one another for individual glory.
Then that's why the original manuscript was divided among the four of them.
Exactly.
Well, Lamont, you mentioned that you received two messages. What was the other one?
I have it here. Listen to this. What were the secrets to be found in the manuscript that was being translated by the four who now are two?
And did you learn the answer to that question?
Not very satisfactorily. I can only guess that these secrets were of an occult nature. Secrets of the ancient Orient.
I see.
And it was in the Orient, Margot, that the Shadow learned his secret of invisibility.
Yes, of course. Lamont, who could have sent those messages?
I don't know his identity, but judging by the phrases he used, they were written by the same man that I spoke to on the telephone. The man who calls himself the Shadow.
But why should he be helping you?
I wish I knew. In any case, Margot, his messages bear further investigation. So I think I shall begin by paying a call on Professors Carter and Amud as the Shadow.
Do you by any chance have a feeling of uneasiness, my dear Professor Carter?
How do you mean?
We still have in our trusted possession the remaining parts of the manuscript. That would make us, shall I say, logical victims.
Then you believe, Professor Armand, that we too are marked for death?
That was not my statement. I merely point to the past as a warning of the future.
Well, that's a pleasant picture. If you don't mind, Professor, I'd rather not hear any more of your prophecies tonight.
Very well, if that...
What was that?
You'll pardon my intrusion, gentlemen.
Who speaks? I see no one.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am called the Shadow.
Shadow? He's coming to kill us.
Oh, now don't be alarmed, Professor Carter. I shan't harm you. I've merely come here seeking information.
It is true. It is true, just as we have heard. You are invisible, Mr. Sherry. Interesting. Very. How do you achieve this invisibility?
By hypnotizing your minds, gentlemen.
Are you here to kill us as you did the others?
I did not kill the others, Professor Carter. That was done by an imposter who used my name. And you can both help me to trust this masquerading murderer.
Help you? How?
By telling me what I wish to know. By answering my questions.
What are your questions?
What precious secrets were contained in the manuscripts that were stolen?
Secrets? I do not understand.
No evasions, please, Professor Armwood. You are both working on sections of that book. What is it about? What mysteries of the ancient Orient does it reveal?
I am afraid you have been misinformed, my dear Shadow. Hasn't he, Professor Carter?
Oh, yes. Yes, there are no secrets.
You're lying, both of you.
Lying?
And your lies are most incriminating. You see, gentlemen, I happen to know the circumstances surrounding the death of Professor Hagen. And based on these circumstances, either of you could have been his murderer.
That's not true.
You don't know what you're saying, Shadow.
Ah, but I do. So shall we say, gentlemen, that it might be wise for you both in the future to be much more careful.
Lamont, did you learn anything from Armwood or Carter?
Nothing definite. They wouldn't talk, either one of them.
Well, what's to be done now?
I'm not sure. I think that I'll take it. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Is this Lamont Cranston?
Yes?
I just want to tell you that of the four who now are two, one more is about to go.
Who is this?
You know who this is, Mr. Cranston. I am the Shadow.
Hello? Hello?
Oh, Lamont. Was that the imposter?
Yes. He's delivered another warning.
What was it?
Another one of the professors is marked for death.
Oh, which one?
He didn't say. We must warn them both at once. Come on, Margot. Carter lives right down the street. We'll go to his place first. If he's all right, we'll call Amon for mayor. But come quickly. We must hurry. Professor Carter? Professor Carter?
Lamont, you suppose something's happened to him already?
We'll soon find out. I'll use the skeleton key. Come on, Margot. Professor Carter?
Lamont, look. The living room. There's been a fight.
Yes. Furniture overturned. Lamps broken.
But where's Carter?
I'll look in the bedroom. Carter? Carter, are you in there?
Any sign of him, Lamont?
No. This is the only other room in the apartment.
What could have happened to him?
I don't know. Quite obvious, though, that he was the one selected as the next victim.
This whole thing becomes more baffling every minute.
Quite the contrary, Margot. I think it becomes increasingly clear.
What do you mean, Lamont?
Before we came here, Margot, I was practically convinced that either Carter or Amud was the one who murdered Hagen and Rice.
Lamont, are you serious?
Yes, Margot. I felt that one of them had learned something from their share of the manuscript that made them kill to obtain the other men's copies.
I see. But how was the shadow impersonated?
That fits into it too, Margot, very neatly. I learned the secret of invisibility in the Orient. It came from an ancient source. And one of those men could have learned this secret from his manuscript.
Yes, it's very logical. But now that Carter is missing...
Yes, that leaves only Amund. And I think we should pay a call on that gentleman at once. We'd like to see Professor Armwood, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. He's not in his apartment.
When do you expect him?
Well, not for some time, sir. He's been called out of town unexpectedly.
When did he leave?
A short time ago, sir.
Did he say where he was going?
No, sir. He just said he's been gone for an indefinite period.
Well, I guess that just proves Armwood's guilt, doesn't it, Lamont?
I don't know, Margot. I've been reviewing the entire case in my mind, and several new factors have occurred to me.
What are they?
Well... Let's wait till we get into the apartment. We'll talk over a cup of tea.
All right.
Won't you go in, Margot?
Yes, thanks. Lamont.
Hmm?
Look, there seems to be a note here right under the door.
A note? Let me see it.
Yes.
Well, listen to this, Margot. Tonight at the hour of midnight in the storage room in the basement of the museum, the one whom you seek can be found.
Grating as a shadow?
I think it does. What time is it, Margot?
Let's see. About 20 of 12.
Well, if I don't want to keep our friend waiting, I'd better be getting over to the museum.
Well, Lamont, suppose this is a trap of the killers, a scheme to do away with you as he did the others.
I'll chance that, Margot. But I want you to get word to Commissioner Weston. Have him at the museum with his men at 12:15. Tell him that he will find the murderer who has pretended to be the shadow. Is there anyone here? This is Lamont Cranston. Is there anyone here? Who is that?
Don't let me frighten you, Mr. Cranston. I'm your old friend, the Shadow.
You are not the Shadow?
No. How would you know that? Answer me.
I repeat, you are not the Shadow.
I see. And would your knowledge be based on the fact that you yourself are the Shadow? Would it, Mr. Cranston? You don't have to answer. I know. I've known for some time now you are the Shadow.
What makes you think so?
I've followed the activities of the Shadow for many years. I was most curious to learn his real identity. I began keeping track of the people who were present before and after all of his appearances.
I see. And after discarding many suspects, your search narrowed down to me, is that it?
That's it, exactly. And I am the only man who knows the identity of the Shadow.
Well, I must compliment you on your cleverness. I admit to you, I am the Shadow.
Yes. But a very powerless shadow at this point. Having learned your secret of invisibility, I've hypnotized your mind before you were aware of me. This time, the real shadow is visible, and I am the one unseen.
How did you learn my secret?
From the Hindu manuscript.
Then you admit the murder of Professor Hagen and Professor Wright?
Yes. Yes, unfortunately, they were in the way.
Why did you commit these crimes in my name?
Because I wanted to attract the attention of you, the real shadow, and I succeeded. I led you on, Lamont Cranston, with my phone calls and anonymous notes.
Why? What was your purpose?
My purpose was and is to put an end to your activities. After tonight, Mr. Cranston, I alone will be the Shadow, and I shall capitalize on this power. You are a fool.
Why do you say that?
Always working for the powers of good. I shall take real advantage of the name. With the trick of invisibility, the world will be mine.
I gather that I am to be the next victim in your chain of murders.
To put it bluntly, yes.
I should think that you would make sure of your talents for invisibility before you attempted that.
What do you mean?
Unlike your other victims, my mind is not receptive to your hypnosis.
What are you saying?
I mean that you have been perfectly visible to me ever since you entered this room, Professor Carter.
What? You see me?
Most clearly. And now, if you will observe closely, I shall instruct you in the true art of hypnosis. Look at me, Professor Carter.
No.
Look at me.
No, no.
I am disappearing before your very eyes. You see? You see?
Wait, you can't do this. You're destroying my power. You hear? You're clouding my mind. Cranston.
I am no longer Cranston, Professor Carter. I am
the Shadow. So, you think you've tricked me, do you? You think you've gained the upper hand, but you're wrong. You're wrong.
That revolver won't be of much use. How will you ever find your target?
I'll find you. I'll find you.
Try again, Carter.
I won't miss this time.
Open up in there. Open up.
I believe that's the police, Carter.
Please.
You'd better put down that gun.
Let them come and get me, and they'd better come shooting.
You'll have to break open the door, Commissioner.
We're coming in.
And beware. This man here is armed.
Keep out of here. I'm warning you. Keep out. You're not going to take me. Oh!
He's been hit, Commissioner. Come ahead.
Colonel, you're here, too.
I came here to apprehend that man on the floor. He is the one who used my name in killing Hagen and Rice.
What? What are you saying?
Look, he's still conscious. Ask him. Ask him.
All right, ask him. Why, Professor Carter.
Yes, he was my impersonator.
Carter. Professor Carter, is this true?
Yes.
Yes. How did you make yourself invisible?
I learned the secret from the manuscript which I've destroyed.
Carter. Carter, listen to me. You must know the identity of the real Shadow, don't you?
Yes.
Who is he?
The real Shadow is...
You'll never learn now, Commissioner. But I think you should know this. In the future, you must always believe one thing about me. The Shadow, at all times, will be working on the side of right and justice.
We'll hear again from the Shadow in just a minute. But first, here's John Barclay, America's home heating expert. Mr. Barclay.
Thank you, Jean Paul King, and good evening, friends. You know, it's amazing how many people have the idea that there's only one size of hard coal. Yes, and I dare say just as many people think that it makes no difference what size coal they burn in their furnace. As a matter of fact, hard coal is prepared and sold in several home sizes. And it may be that one particular size, or possibly a combination of sizes, will give you the best heat for the least money. Of course, many factors enter into the choice of the size coal for your particular furnace. Factors such as chimney construction, draft conditions, and the size of your furnace. At any rate, trained John Barclay serviceman can give a quick inspection of your heating plant and tell at a glance whether or not you're burning the right size coal. This free inspection is part of the extra home heating service provided by your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer. So remember, if you're not completely satisfied with the results you're getting, maybe you're burning the wrong size coal. Just phone your neighborhood Blue Coal dealer first thing in the morning. Thank you.
Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Next week, same time, same station, the Blue Coal Dealers of America bring you an adventure of the Shadow that will amaze you with its breathtaking thrills. So be sure to listen, and be sure to phone your friendly Blue Coal Dealers for greater heating comfort at less cost. This is Gene Paul King saying, keep the home fires burning with Blue Coal.
And when the 17th took up the whole boat, I called him to come out here because the sun is out the leak.
Okay, hold on a second. Wait, you're going to love this, Dave.
You're okay.
Leo Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
You know?
And he got about $400.
Quality plumber. I'm going to see that. Try, and then definitely get with the people that sold you the house. And then the other thing, USAA, for homeowners.
Yeah, because I'm going to ask Dean, my dad, to come do my concert in the truck. He's military.
Yeah.
He military,
yeah.
You know, and so I'm
going to
ask, yeah.
Yeah.
And there lies your moral. Or,
yes,
if someone actually becomes invisible, the downside is not only can others not see you, but you can't see them either because you'd be blind.
Ah.
There we go, Dave. There we go. Got the after moral sound effects. in hand.
Yeah. Actually, I'm a little offended by the ending of that show.
You're offended?
How dare you? How dare he accused me of burning the wrong size coal? That's what I want to know. How dare he do that?
That took a lot of gall. That took a lot of gall.
It may take the rest of the show for me to calm down. It might. It just might.
All right, Dave. Breathe deep. I mean, between that and a major potential sugar crash, we will get through this tonight. One way or another.
Oh, my.
Entertainment galore, such as...
Wow.
When my mortgage went up,
I think we might need to discuss. I wouldn't even know if he called us. Maybe this is a prolonged butt dial, you know?
Yeah. This is maybe not something we want to air. But it could be potentially funny, but I just hope it doesn't end tragically.
Yeah.
What's going on is invisible to us, much as this is invisible to you. And all three of our shows about invisibility. Dave, what's the first Invisible Man movie you've ever seen or TV program?
It may have been younger as the Invisible Man, the Claude Rains movie, but I do know, I know I enjoyed the years Dave McCallum played the Invisible Man for that. And I probably did, you know, shortly after that, I did catch the British version of the Invisible Man. That was okay. I like the David McCallum TV series, which was about 1974, 75, thereabouts.
I think the first time I recall anybody being invisible in a movie might have been Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man.
It was much
later that I saw the actual Claude Rains version of the first film adaptation, and then the subsequent sequels, which were they were okay.
I don't know if I could see Meets Invisible Man. No, that's not one of the bigger ones that they promote a lot. They usually do Frankenstein and the Mummy, but they don't always promote the Invisible Man outside of Vincent Price's voice at the end of Frankenstein, you know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, at the House of Frankenstein, Vincent Price played the Invisible Man in the boat at the end. He lights up a cigarette and scares the heck out of the boys.
Yep. So, yeah, trying to think where somebody was actually visible. You know, it could be watching an episode of, like, Bewitched, something like that. The first time I saw someone be invisible, that kind of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe that's it, too. I Dream of Jeannie. I was pretty young when that was on the first run.
Yeah.
She could have turned invisible a couple times, too, I'm sure. Usually in those shows, they were done with strings, just moving props around, where they really...
Right.
If you look at the original Claude Rains movie, the invisibility was fantastic for that era. Just amazing.
It was. Yeah. And if you ever watched it on Svengoolie... He gave a lot of tricks of how they did some of that back then, because there really weren't a whole lot of, there wasn't the green screen type stuff that there is today, you know?
No, you had to, in some cases, in green screen stuff, you'll see sometimes people having to wear green all over them with high points highlighted so they could CGI some other image on it, where they had to wear suits all black except for what they wanted to be visible. Or they had to use fade-outs and mix that as well.
Yeah. And then it would, right. And with black backgrounds there, too. That's why it kind of became invisible. But wearing black on black backgrounds.
Yep, and our old boy in the silent era, Mr. Millier, George Millier, or is it Millies? I don't know. I'll find the correct pronunciation before I start hosting silent films. he did some amazing stuff with mirrors and things like that, being a stage magician prior to tinkering with cinematography. CW joins us in the chat.
Yay!
Oh, there you go, my favorite Martian. Predates.
You're right. You're right, because half the time.
Yeah.
Yep, you're right. That there you go. I had kind of forgotten about, but I didn't really. So yeah.
Leave it to CW. She always turns up a new corner that we haven't discussed. That's very apt and appropriate. And Fogsbane really likes the Invisible Man as being one of the best of all the original Universals.
Claude Rains is something else. He's one heck of an actor.
Oh,
and even once in a while when he shows up on the radio, he has such a presence, like Orson Welles does. He's one of those guys that just has such a presence that he can take over, you know?
Yeah. I think he was in the one with the mad policeman that we played early on. Was that a suspense,
right,
I think?
It was a suspense with Vincent Price and Claude Rains, and that was the excellent show. I mean, going against Vincent Price and yet holding your own or still taking it. It just really was. That was a wonderful episode. Yes.
Yep. The Hands of Mr. Ottermole. It was show number 11 back in February of 2017.
Wow, are we getting old?
Getting, no, Dave, we have obtained old. We have aspired to and obtained old. And that's why we play some old time radio.
Yeah, I everywhere I go, I inquire.
I'm older. I feel like we should be calling 911 at this point. I don't know. I don't know why. It's probably nothing, but I have my concerns.
I'm being old. I try to make sure I get all my senior discounts now.
Yep. Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting about those. But, yeah.
I went into a restaurant and looked around, and I was saying to myself, man, there's nothing but old people in here. So I thought, crap, I'm an old person.
Yeah, I'm in here. Crap.
Oh, my. Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed. Well, who's next? Who's on the chopping block?
Who's next? Who's on the chopping block? Well, you know what? Actually, Suspense is a very good show. I don't know whether you want to lead up to that or head into that. John Dixon.
Head right on over to Suspense.
Yeah, a John Dixon Carr story, who did a lot of – he was very – in early Suspenses, he was very much an influence there. He wrote a lot of stories for that, or his stories were adapted for that, and it was just a big part of the early part of Suspense. And this is one of his stories here.
Yeah, and generally when you hear his name in the credits as the writer, you know you're in for a treat. And this one is no exception, The Man Without a Body.
And that comes to us from, it looks like it's May 22nd of 1943.
And he a poop in the house.
Oh.
But if you take him for a walk,
the fine,
yeah, he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I got him from my niece.
Suspense.
I hope she was talking about a dog.
This is the Man in Black, here again to introduce Columbia's program, Suspense. In our starring Hollywood cast tonight are Mr. John Sutton, who appears as a young English doctor, Jim Norwood, who knew a great deal more than he admitted concerning the strange events which we are about to relate, and Mr. George Zucco, who plays the village curate, the Reverend Arthur Morley. Our story, and it bears none but a coincidental resemblance to H.G. Wells' famous short novel, The Invisible Man, is by John Dixon Carr and is called The Man Without a Body, tonight's tale of suspense. If you have been with us on these Tuesday nights, you will know that suspense is compounded of mystery and suspicion and dangerous adventure. In this series are tales calculated to intrigue you. And so it is with The Man Without a Body and the performances of John Sutton and George Zucco. We again hope to keep you in suspense. A lonely beach of low white sand hills, edged by the surf of the North Sea. And back from the beach, drowsing as it has drowsed for 10 centuries, lies the village of Aldbridge in Suffolk. There is the seawall, now defaced by air raid shelters. And there are the rolling grain fields, the thatched white cottages, the spire of St. Luke's Church above the oak trees. Ancient and bell-haunted, lost among hedgerows, this village could never cause consternation in London newspaper offices. And yet, on that warm night nearly 4 years ago...
This time it's really happened. A man without a body, completely invisible.
Tommy boy, look at this dispatch. Reign of terror in Suffolk Village.
Has another of H.G. Wells' romances come true?
An invisible man? I can't believe it.
Well, what's the matter with that village? They all gone statty?
Mr. George Wellman, builder, states that as he was returning home along the main road from Bury St. Edmunds...
He distinctly saw a man's hat, without any head under it, moving towards him about 6 feet above the ground.
Oh, George must have been full of beer. We can't use this story. Coffee boy!
Even more surprising evidence was given by the Reverend Arthur Morley, Vicar of St. Luke's Church.
Oh, the parson? You don't think he was full of beer?
One question above all agitates the village. Who is Professor Ansmith? Who is this elderly American, said to be an inventor, who has settled at Aldbridge and leased a part of the house belonging to the local doctor? Out of some terrifying workshop, to strike like a maniac, where least expected, has there at last emerged...
A real invisible man?
The Church of St. Luke, Aldbridge. On that same Sunday evening, the evening service is over now, though an echo bell still lingers. In the vestry at the rear of the church, where white surplices hang like ghosts, the Reverend Arthur Morley sits with his daughter Janice. It is a stone room of painted windows, now many colored in the sunset. And here is the drowsy summer light turns to dust.
Janice, I don't believe it.
I know, Father.
I saw it with my own eyes, yet I don't believe it. You don't think we were dreaming, do you?
No, Father. We weren't dreaming.
If this goes on, the whole village will be in a frenzy. But what can I do?
We could go to Professor Ansmith. And ask him straight out.
Ask him whether he's responsible for these...
Yes.
I wonder, Janice. A man isn't hurting anybody, you know. You couldn't ask for a quieter person or a better neighbor. And yet... What's that?
Father, you are upset. It's only Mr. Emmett coming down from the belfry.
Emmett? Oh, yes, of course. Is that you, Mr. Emmett?
It's me, all right, sir. And very much in the flesh. Did you think I was the invisible man?
Mr. Emmett, I forbid you to mention that subject.
Very good, sir. But there's others, begging your pardon, that do mention it.
Oh, yes, yes, forgive me. I spoke too sharply.
Oh, that's all right, sir. No harm done, no bones broken. Mind you, not that I hold with this talk about invisible men. It ain't natural, I say. It ain't hardly Christian. I'm a greengrocer by trade, and I believe in what I can weigh and feel and...
What's the matter, Mr. Emmett? Is anything wrong?
Excuse me, sir. And you too, miss. Do you see anybody in this room except us?
No, of course not. Why?
Because I could have sworn something brushed past me just now.
You're imagining things, Mr. Emmett.
Yes, sir, I dare say.
There's
but
nobody hidden in the belfry tower, I hope.
No, sir. I had a look-see. And what's more, there's not going to be anybody up there once I've locked the door. Now, let the blighter try and get in.
Oh, please, Mr. Emmett. And you too, Father. You're talking about this invisible man as though though he actually existed.
There's something funny going on, miss. You can't deny that.
No, none of us can deny it.
And what's more, sir, it's getting pretty dark in here. Hadn't you and Miss Janice better get along to the vicarage while I lock up?
No, we can't go just yet, Mr. Emmett. We're expecting Dr. Norwood.
Dr. Jim Norwood, sir? What does he say about all this?
Oh, you might ask him yourself, Mr. Emmett. I think that's probably him now. Come in. The vestry door's not locked.
Oh, hello, Padre. Hello, Janice. I'm sorry I'm late.
Oh, hello, Jim. You seem a good deal out of breath.
I am out of breath, Janice, because there's blue blazes to pay down in the village.
Not more trouble.
Yes, I'm afraid so. They're holding a mass meeting at the Coach and Horses, and they're ready to murder Professor Ansmith. If this invisible man cuts any more capers, we may see a real old-fashioned lynching in an English village.
Now, look here, my boy. This has got to stop.
I know that, Padre, but how are we going to stop it?
Sit down there, Jim, across the table from me.
Yes, sir.
First of all, what do you know about this Professor Ansmith?
Nothing, sir. Nothing at all.
But you rent part of your house to him.
Oh, my dear Padre, that house is twice as big as I can possibly manage. I was only too glad to get a tenant.
He gave you references, I imagine?
Yes, but I didn't bother to check them. He's a quiet old boy. Pays his rent on the dot. Never does anything except read and go for long walks.
Are you quite sure of that, Jim?
The village has war nerves, that's all. With a camouflage aerodrome in the neighborhood, they're apt to imagine anything.
True, perhaps, but...
That talk about dynamos humming in the old boy's room and blue lights flashing is rubbish out of a sensational film. They imagine the whole thing. Finally, this crazy story about an invisible man playing the gramophone. Why,
that's... It's not a crazy story, Jim. Janice and I saw it happen.
You what?
Last night, about 9:30, Janice and I were out for a walk in the lane that runs past your house. On the way, we met Willie Kendrick, and he joined us.
Well, sir?
Listen, Jim. On that side of the house, there's a little square room with two windows and no furniture except a round table and a couple of chairs. Do you know the one we mean?
Yes, of course. Professor Ansmith uses it. What about the room?
It wasn't quite blackout time. The windows were up, the curtains weren't drawn, and the room was brightly lighted. On the table stood an old-fashioned gramophone with a horn and a crank handle. Beside it lay a pair of white cotton gloves, like gardener's gloves. The gramophone was playing away for dear life, but there was nobody in the room. Janice thought that was a bit odd, a gramophone going full tilt with nobody there, and called my attention to it. Just then the gramophone started to run down. We could hear the record slow and go off key. As it did so...
Well, sir, go on.
As it did so, those white gloves got up off the table.
Got up off the table?
Got up off the table, took hold of the gramophone, and wound it up again.
Mr. Emmett, what on earth are you doing?
I dropped some candlesticks.
So I see. Please pick them up again.
Yes.
Padre, are you serious?
Perfectly serious.
A pair of gloves without any hands inside them?
Yes.
But what did they do exactly?
The left-hand glove steadied the gramophone. The right-hand glove wound it up. Then they both hung in the air, beating time to the music. It should have been funny. I can only assure you it was not funny.
So what happened then?
Oh, Jim, it was horrible. Willie Kendrick let out a yell and ran down the lane between the apple trees as though the devil were after him.
I can't say I blame him.
Father and I just stood there and...
Stared is the word, my dear.
Yes, stared. I can't forget any of it. The three-legged table and the whirling record and the blue flowers on the wallpaper. But there was nobody there. We could see past the table and under the table and all over the room... And there was nobody there.
Except the man without any body.
Confound the man without any body.
Father, suppose it is true.
As a clergyman, my dear, I prefer to remain agnostic. This thing's a trick.
Yes, but how's it done and why?
That's the whole point, Jim. What worries me is the effect on our people here. We call ourselves intelligent, and yet, look at us. Even Mr. Emmett there.
Hey, what's that about me, sir?
A few minutes ago, you thought something brushed past you when you were coming down the stairs from the bell tower. Oh, didn't you?
Well, yes, sir.
You see what I mean, Jim?
But I didn't really think so, sir. Not really. It was imagination, just like the doctor said. Because I searched that tower. I locked the door afterwards.
Exactly. But the mere force of suggestion, nothing more, might lead you to believe.
That's not suggestion, Father.
Sir, I'll take my Bible oath. There's nobody in that belfry.
Bells can't ring by themselves, old man. There's somebody pulling the rope up there, and we're going to find out who it is.
Now, one moment, all of you.
Well, what's wrong, Padre? You're as white as a ghost.
This blasphemous mockery, it seems, extends even to the church. Very well. You will stay with Janice, my boy. Emmett and I will collar this invisible man.
Now, why can't I go, too?
I don't believe in this, but I should prefer to have someone with Janice. You're not afraid, Mr. Emmett?
If it's alive, sir, I'm not afraid of it. And if it's dead, well, you're not afraid of it. The tower door's open, sir. I'm ready.
Don't do it, Father. Don't go.
You can't help them, Janice. Sit down here. Take it easy.
Jim Norwood, what's wrong with you?
Wrong with me?
You've got an odd look, too. And the light's fading. And the surfaces look like ghosts. And in another minute, that fell would drive me mad. Suppose he has got in.
Who?
The invisible man.
Well, don't talk rot.
As there are sounds that the ear cannot hear, so there are colors that the eye cannot see. I read that somewhere. He hasn't hurt anybody yet. But suppose he turns nasty and does hurt somebody.
He can't hurt anybody.
How do you know?
Janice, listen to me. Take my hand.
Oh, but Jim...
I want to tell you a few things you won't understand. I don't ask you to understand. I just ask you to remember.
Well, what is it?
The first is a question. If you were a government official and wanted to find an expert on camouflage, where would you go?
An expert on camouflage?
Yes. And the second point is this. I studied medicine in Germany.
Oh, I know that, but that's...
One night on a bet, I hid backstage at the Winter Garden Theater in Berlin. I saw the whole show from backstage and... And I learned a great deal.
Jim Norwood, what on earth are you talking
George
about?
George Wellman and I have talked the whole thing over. In a way, Janice, there is an invisible man. I can tell you who he is and how he works. But there's no danger, do you understand? There's no danger at all. If...
Jim, what was that?
I don't know.
You do know. I can see it in your face. You do know.
I think somebody's fallen.
Fallen?
From the top of the belfry.
Oh, Father!
Stay here, Janice. You can't do any good.
Let go of my arm. I'm going up there.
No, you're not. I didn't think what the danger might be. Besides, there's somebody coming down the stairs now. Stay just where you are and don't move until...
Oh, Father. Father, are you all right?
Steady, sir. Take it easy now.
I'm perfectly all right, yes. But you'd better go into the churchyard and see to Emmett. He
fell?
No, Dennis, he did not fall. He was thrown.
Oh.
Thrown? By whom?
There's no time to argue now. You're a doctor. Go out and see to him.
Well, is he in...
I don't know. Go.
Yes, sir.
For I will work a deed in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. Janice, this is incredible.
Why?
You heard the bell ring. I saw it ring.
Without anybody there?
I was as close to that bell as I am to you now. No hand held the rope. There were no strings or wires or any tricks to make it move. It had clanged back and forth alone in the tower. I thought I heard someone laugh.
Laugh?
Oh, don't take that too seriously. We were both overwrought, and the noise of the bell was deafening.
What about Mr. Emmett?
Emmett yelled some words I couldn't hear and lunged for the bell. Then something caught him. Something caught him and gave him a sledgehammer blow in the back. That belfry is nothing but open arches. You heard him scream. I saw his face just before he went over.
Lock the door to the tower, Father. Lock it.
I can't lock it. Emmett has the key. But why should I lock it?
Because he's still in there.
He?
He hadn't done any harm before, but he's done harm now. There's no telling what might happen if he gets loose.
You mean?
I mean Professor Ann Smith's protege, whoever he is. The man without a body.
That's right. George Zucco in this one shares my birthday, except his was only a few years before mine in 1886. Not much on him in Wikipedia here. He was born in Manchester, Lancashire, and his mother ran a dressmaking business. His father, a Greek merchant. Yep.
George Zucco was in all kinds of horror movies, right?
Yeah. A bunch of them.
It was.
There isn't a lot of info about him?
Not much personal or much. It's just a small article for Wikipedia, although they credit his filmography, which is extensive, including The Mad Monster with Gwen Strange, Dead Men Walk, Black Raven, The Mad Ghoul, Voodoo Man, Mummy's Ghost, House of Frankenstein.
Oh, okay. There's a huge bio excerpt on him on the internetmoviedatabase.com.
That makes more sense. I should have went there.
Yeah.
A lot more about him there.
That's where my big bio is.
He actually played Professor Moriarty in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes in 1939.
He did.
Wow.
Yeah.
Crazy. He's
been around the block a few times.
Yeah. Often played a doctor or usually sinister and or professors.
Yes.
He's an avid dog lover, owned several German Shepherds. There's that. Oh, wow. Spent his final years in the Monterey Sanitarium, an assisted living facility. But why the name sanitarium? Okay.
They used to call just regular hospitals sanitariums. It doesn't necessarily mean the cuckoo hut. The booby hat.
I don't know why there was always that association. Oh, by the way, hello everyone. Glad to go here. Blah blah. Coming in late.
Yeah. Now you've been with us all through.
Believe it or not, you've been with us. You may not know it, but your phone was on.
Oh yeah. That was the interview. I was like, wow.
We kind of figured you must have buck dialed us and kept going.
No, I called you guys, and then I went out to get something, and I saw someone I hadn't seen in a long time, and I went out there and talked to them. Then I took the earbuds, and I took them and put them around my neck instead of on my ears. So I actually kind of forgot.
What killed me is when somebody said going number two on the floor, and I'm hoping to God she was talking about a dog. So anyway.
No, it was a dog. It was a dog that had not been trained as a pup. And that's just so wrong. I mean, if you're going to have a dog, come on.
Yeah.
But,
take that,
yeah.
You know, outside. That's right.
Yeah. So, the reinforcement and they'll get better. But, odd. It was a weird circumstance. But anyway, so a whole bunch of crazy stuff going on with this man without a body. They don't say invisible man. They keep saying man without a body.
That's right.
What if there's a body without a man?
We are running tight on time, I think, tonight. So let's wrap up suspense. The man without a body.
Under the red sunset, some quarter of a mile away, a grass-carpeted lane winds between rows of apple trees. The lane is dusky, though lights shine into it from the windows of a large stone house, Dr. Norwood's house beyond the apple tree. Up and down. Up and down, a shadowy figure is pacing. An elderly figure. A dejected figure. Tall and frail as a shadow among shadows. Muttering to itself. Shaking its head. Now and then raising one fist in bewilderment or anguish. Sometimes the light gleams on large spectacles and a kindly mouth. Up and down. Endlessly up. Bend down, strides Professor Hansmith.
I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty. How can I convince them that I'm not guilty? Who's there? I saw you dodge behind that tree. Stand out, sir.
Did you call me, Professor Hansmith?
Yes, I did call you. Who are you?
You probably won't recognize me, Professor Hansmith.
Nevertheless, my friend, may I ask what your name is?
My name is Wellman, Professor. George Wellman.
Wellman. I've heard that name.
Maybe you have. I'm a builder by trade and a great friend of Dr. Norwood's.
Wait one moment. Aren't you the young man whose firm is putting up these air raid shelters along the seawall and making such an unholy din with your riveting machines?
That's me.
And come to think of it, aren't you the one who first started this alarm about an invisible man?
Yes, because I met him.
You did not meet him, sir. This whole thesis is scientific nonsense, and I won't have it.
You won't have what?
I'm an old man, Mr. Wellman. I never did anybody the least harm. As God is my judge, I know nothing whatever about this... What's that?
It looks like the vicar's car, Professor. You'd better stand back. This is a pretty narrow lane.
Ansmith! Professor Ansmith!
Yes, Mr. Morley, I hear you.
We thought you'd better drive over here straight away. I think you've met my daughter. And, of course, you know Dr. Norwood.
Yes,
but there's no time for any social formalities. Get into your house, Professor Ansmith. Get in quickly and close the shutters.
But why should I do that?
Because there's a mob coming, sir, and we can't stop them.
Hurry, do hurry.
A mob coming here? Why?
Haven't you heard the news?
I've heard nothing, my friend. The only person I've seen has been that young man there who chews a toothpick and hides behind the trees.
George Wellman? What on earth are you doing here?
Watching, Janice. Watching and waiting, just as usual. Listen to me, Professor Ansmith. Henry Emmett, the head verger at St. Luke's, was thrown from the belfry window not 20 minutes ago.
Not by me, sir, I assure you. I had nothing to do with it.
No, not by you, but apparently by the invisible man.
Oh, Father in heaven, will this never stop?
Not till we catch the fellow.
No.
Be quiet, Mr. Bowman, please.
I'm sorry, Padre. I take it back.
I myself can testify that no visible person laid hands on Emmett. He was struck as though with a gigantic fist. What's the matter, Professor Ansmith? Is anything wrong?
No. I was just thinking. Is Emmett dead?
Fortunately, no.
I'm glad of that, my friend, for a certain person's sake.
He's not even seriously hurt. The bell tower isn't high, and a tree broke the force of his fall. But he's badly shaken up, and that crowd of the coach and horses means trouble. If you haven't anything to say to us, if you haven't a word of explanation to utter...
Listen, Padre, don't you hear anything?
Yes, I thought I heard voices.
Can't be that crowd from the village. We're too far ahead of them.
It's a crowd, all right. And they've been here for hours.
But where? I don't see anybody.
Jim! Look, behind the trees.
Look behind the trees. Look beyond the hedgerows. Look for any place where a watcher can hide.
And may I ask what they're doing here?
They're watching you, Professor Ansmith.
More of your spies, you mean?
You can call them anything you please. They're getting impatient and they want a showdown. If I as much as hold my hand up like this...
What's that?
Don't throw stones at the windows, you fools! You're only breaking the doctor's window!
Gentlemen, I can't have any more of this. Be quiet, all of you, and listen to me.
Well, sir, we're listening.
I'm a peaceful man. I like to live in peace with my neighbors. I have nothing to do with this so-called reign of terror. But you don't believe that, do you?
No.
Then I must expose a fraud. Now, don't blame me if I expose the trickster, too. I have made preparations to show you the invisible man. The man without a body.
Quiet, everybody!
Mr. Morley, I believe you and your daughter walked through this lane last night while I was away at the Bury St. Edmunds.
I don't know about your being away, sir. My daughter and I were certainly here, yes.
Good. Miss Janice Morley.
Yes, Professor Ansmith.
Will you look towards your right, please, at the house? What do you see?
It's the same room.
What room?
The room with the little round table and the gramophone.
It's a three-legged table, you notice.
Yes, of course.
But there's nobody in the room.
No, nobody at all.
Are conditions exactly as they were last night?
Yes, except there aren't any gloves on the table.
No, but the invisible man is there.
Oh.
A living presence, ready to act and breathe and even kill.
Even kill?
With your permission, I shall now address him.
Hello in there. Hello in there. Hello in there.
If anybody answers him, Father, I'm going to scream.
Quiet, Janice, quiet.
Father, look. The gloves are appearing on the table.
I call out to him and I speak as follows.
Hold the phonograph with your left glove. That's it. Turn the handle with your right. One turn. Two, three, four. That's enough. Touch the spring with your left hand. Push the record. Lower the needle with your right and... Ladies and gentlemen, the Invisible Man.
Hold, hold him off! Hold, you fools! Don't you see?
On the contrary, let them throw all they like. Aim at the table, my friend. Aim at the table.
Why at the table?
Because then they'll see the trick.
I don't follow you. What trick?
The trick of the looking glasses. There. You see now, my friend?
I think I do.
The legs of the table form a triangle with its point towards you. Panels of looking glass are fitted in the two sides facing you.
What do you know about that?
You think you can see under the table, but what you actually see are the side walls of the room reflected in those two mirrors.
Oh, wait a minute. You mean...
I mean that my old servant, hidden behind the mirrors, has just been working the gloves to a panel in the tabletop. It's a very old trick, first shown by Colonel Stadair at the London Polytechnic.
And that's what happened last night?
Yes.
And you had nothing to do with it?
Nothing whatever, nor had my servant.
Then who did do it and why? What is the explanation of all this?
Well, I can't tell you why. That's what beats me. But I can tell you everything else.
This invisible man who's been scaring us all silly?
My dear young lady, there's no invisible man. There never has been.
I might believe that, Professor Ann Smith, if I hadn't seen a church bell ringing where there was no hand to ring it. And poor old Emmett flung out of the tower as though a giant hand had got hold of him. You're not saying that was done with the looking glasses?
No, my friend, not at all. That was really clever.
Strings? Wires? Ropes?
No, they weren't necessary.
But the thing's impossible.
Oh, no. The same principle was used by my old friend J.N. Maskelyne to make mechanical figures work. Psycho played whist, and Zoe drew pictures. I myself...
Go on, sir. You yourself, what are you going to say?
The secret I was about to say remains unknown even today. You were right, in a way, when you tell us that Emmett acted as though a giant had got hold of him. A giant had got hold of him. At least, a gigantic force.
Oh, before we all go completely mad, would you mind telling us what this gigantic force was?
Not at all. It was compressed air.
Compressed air?
But don't you see it even yet, any of you?
No.
A compressed air pipe with 1,000 pounds pressure behind it was run up into the tower facing the bell. It could be operated from the ground outside. The pressure was turned on and off in bursts. It made that heavy bell swing like a toy. Emmett, don't you remember? Emmett rushed forwards towards the bell.
And the air pressure?
The air pressure struck him like a sledgehammer and flung him headlong out of the tower. There's your miracle, gentlemen. That's all there was to it.
Sir, I can't doubt what you say. It's too circumstantial and too right.
But what, my friend?
The compressed air tanks. The mechanical apparatus to work this trick.
Well, what about it?
Well, where did it come from? Such things don't grow on bushes.
No, but they do grow on riveting machines.
Riveting machines?
Yes, such as the riveting machine they're using on the air raid shelters along the seawall. Would you care to tell us, Dr. James Norwood, why you and your friend Wellman have been playing all these tricks?
Jim Norwood, is this true?
Why, of course it's true, Mr. Morley. Don't be so gullible.
Jim and George Wellman doing all this? I don't believe it.
Take a look at their faces, young lady. Did you ever see a guiltier-looking pair?
So we look guilty, do we?
Frankly, you do.
We played the whole game and convinced the village there was an invisible man. Is that it?
Yes. You worked the glove trick in your own house. And Wellman worked the air trick with his own equipment. Everything else was nothing but a pack of lies and a lot of atmosphere. Playing conjurers and making a blasted hash of it.
Is that all, Professor Ann Smith?
Well, remember, you brought this on yourselves. I didn't want to expose you.
No, Professor.
I bet you didn't.
Easy, George. Take it easy.
Jim, is this true?
Before you start pitching into me, Janice, let me have my word first. You remember what I said to you at the church tonight?
At the church?
Yes, I asked you to remember something, even if you didn't understand it. All right. Can you remember what it was?
Oh, Jim, please. You're only trying to evade this. Oh, I'm so confused now, I don't remember anything. All I can think of is this horrible business and what's behind it. Father can't believe his ears, and I'm not much better. We've practically idolized you. All we want you to do is answer a straight question. Jim, are these accusations true?
Yes, they are true.
Doubtless he had a good reason, Janice. Doubtless he had a good reason.
Yes, we had a good reason.
The very best reason in the world.
You had a good reason for scaring people half to death and trying to kill poor old Henry Emmett?
We didn't mean any harm against Emmett. That was an accident.
But you dare to defend yourself now?
Yes, just that.
Before we go home, Father, shall we apologize to Professor Ansmith? I hope he'll try to think better of English hospitality.
Good, Janice, good. I hope he will, too.
You hope he will.
Listen, Janice, before you act on any belief, you have to be absolutely sure in your own mind. George and I had to prove something, and now I'm glad to say we have proved it.
Oh, I can't stand this any longer. If you have anything to say, go on and say it straight out. What was it you had to prove?
We had to prove to our own satisfaction that this pretended American who calls himself Professor Ansmith...
Pretended American?
Who calls himself Professor Ansmith?
We had to prove that this pretended American was no other than Karl Heinrich von Kleist, the celebrated stage magician from the Winter Garden Theater in Berlin.
What?
Whose real job is to find the camouflage aerodrome near Bury St. Edmunds.
No.
He explained his own tricks very nicely, George. We'll swear out a warrant in the morning.
And so closes The Man Without a Body, starring John Sutton and George Zucco. Tonight's tale of suspense. This is your narrator, The Man in Black, who conveys to you Columbia's invitation to spend this half hour in suspense with us again next Tuesday, when the distinguished actress, Miss Agnes Moorehead, will be heard in one of her many brilliant characterizations. Starring with Miss Moorehead will be Miss Ellen Drew, who is Carol Linden, tells the amazing story of Uncle Henry's Rosebush. The producer of these broadcasts is William Speer, with Ted Bliss, the director, Bernard Herrmann and Lucian Mahowick, conductor and composer, and John Dixon Carr, the author, collaborated on tonight's Suspense.
This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Murder? Murder? What? Murder?
Murder, you say?
Murder.
Eerie House Radio proudly presents Scar's Moral of the Story.
Simple folk can come up with many impossible stories.
So, Gara, when was the last time you were invisible?
Last Tuesday. And I haven't found myself yet.
Keep looking. Overturn every stone.
Scariest thing today that we didn't have growing up would be if your cell phone becomes invisible. If you misplace your cell phone and you're like, where is it? You can't just, you know, you don't have a key fob to go bing, bing, you know.
Yeah. And the other thing is unexpected people at your front door.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. And car keys. Oh, my. I have almost, there's like a slight bit of terror if you misplace your car keys. If they become invisible to you, you know, where to put it? Then you go look in the freezers. Like, you didn't put them in the freezer.
Last time I was invisible was way back in some of my college classes. I just didn't show.
I I don't think I've ever been invisible. I'm too boisterous. No, outgoing, gregarious. There you go. That's the word.
I can only be invisible in a couple circumstances. One, on radio.
Mm-hmm.
Two is when nobody's looking. Then I can turn invisible.
Mm-hmm. Or if you find a really, really, really dark shadow.
The invisible, invisible boy from Mystery Men.
Yep, invisible boy.
Couldn't turn invisible if anybody was watching.
Yeah, as long as nobody's watching.
That's right. And then he really did turn invisible. That was great.
We think he did. No conclusive information, but yeah, we think.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because it would be, okay, so if he's invisible, no one can look at him when he's invisible or he's not visible. I don't know how he'd work it out, but yeah.
I don't know.
But
don't you have to take your clothes off when you're invisible if you want to go, like, unnoticed?
That would get cold.
The first movie with Claude Rains. He's running around in the snow invisible. I'm like, oh, that can't be good. That can't be good at all.
No.
If you can invent a formula to make yourself invisible, you need to make some invisible underpants. I'm sorry, you're just gonna.
In fact, I think I heard him say in the movie, "I can't see you." He says, "Come on, it's just that I'm cold."
The lady said, "I can't see you."
Just cold.
We're cutting close on some time there, Dale. We better be heading in.
Two mysterious traveler coming up next. The Man Who Vanished.
Woohoo!
Yep.
Originally broadcast
July 6th of 1948, episode number 151.
Mutual Broadcasting System presents The Mysterious Traveler, written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Kogan, and starring tonight two stars of stage and radio, Wendell Holmes and Roger DeCoven, in an original radio drama titled The Man Who Vanished.
This is The Mysterious Traveler, inviting you to join me on another journey into the realm of the strange and the terrifying. I hope you will enjoy the trip, that it will thrill you a little and chill you a little. So settle back, get a good grip on your nerves, and be comfortable, if you can, as you hear the story I call The Man Who Vanished. Begins in a small white-walled hospital room. Charles Ordway, a man of 45, has just awakened. He looks about him in puzzlement. Then memory returns to him, and he begins to call frantically.
Doctor! Doctor, nurse! Where are you? I must speak to the doctor!
Yes, Mr. Ordway, what is it?
Are you the doctor?
No, sir, I'm only the attendant. You want to speak to Dr. Harvey?
Yes, yes, I must. It's a matter of life and death.
Okay, Mr. Ordway, okay. Dr. Harvey, 402, please. He's coming now, sir.
Thank you. Tell me what day is this. It's Friday, isn't it? It must be Friday.
Sure, it's Friday, Mr. Ordway. But here's Dr. Harvey now.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Ordway. You wanted to speak to me?
Yes, doctor, but tell me quickly, what time is it?
It's just 10 minutes past 10, Mr. Ordway.
Oh, thank heavens, my brother John isn't dead. There's still time to save him.
Your brother?
Yes, doctor, when I woke up, I didn't know how long it was since I was brought here to the hospital and drugged into silence, but I don't suppose they told you about John.
No, I'm afraid they didn't.
Well, then I'll tell you. I'll make you believe me. John's safe for several hours yet, so I can tell you the whole story. The story they wouldn't give me a chance to tell.
Yes, go right ahead, Mr. Ordway. I'll just sit here and make myself comfortable.
Well, I'll try to tell it calmly, Doctor. I don't want you to think I'm hysterical. First of all, you have to understand that My brother John is a freak of nature.
A freak?
Yes. He's perfectly healthy and highly intelligent, but he was born without any natural coloring at all. His eyes are pink. His skin is a chalk white. His hair is like bleached flax. His eyebrows and lashes are practically invisible.
It's the most unusual condition, but it happens once in a while. It's called albinism.
Well, it's a hideous condition for an intelligent, sensitive man. John's boyhood was a torture for him until our father took us both out of school and had us tutored to spare John the misery of being considered a freak of nature by the other children.
Yes, I understand, Mr. Rodway. Please, go on.
Well, as we grew up, John's chief interest was science. So I studied it, too. Our father had a complete laboratory built in our home. After his death, we continued to live there together, working on experimental research.
Along what lines, Mr. Ordway?
Well, our efforts were centered on discovering a cure for John's condition. To achieve that, we worked hopefully for years, but we always failed. My brother remained outwardly calm, but inwardly, he began to brood. Then, one evening, he came into my room.
Charles.
Oh, yes, John. Finished in the lab?
In a way, Charles. I have something to show you.
Show me? You mean you found a cure?
Not exactly. But look at this wire cage. Examine the white rat I have in it.
White rat? Good heaven.
This morning, that was an ordinary white rat. But now look at it.
It's like a rat made out of glass. It's almost transparent.
It is transparent. You can see completely through it.
But John, this is amazing.
This is what I've been working on these last months, Charles. I've been developing a serum that would alter living tissues to make them transparent.
I wouldn't have believed it possible.
I don't see why not. Nature does it all the time. She makes jellyfish that are quite transparent.
Well, yes, of course. I didn't think.
But this is only the first step. My next step is to develop the serum further to make living tissues invisible.
Invisible?
You look skeptical, my dear Charles. But look at this rat. He's half invisible already. In a dim light, he'd vanish.
Yes, that's true, but...
The basic principle is perfectly natural, Charles. It's only a matter of refining it. And then, Charles, well, take a freak like myself. So colorless, he's already well started toward invisibility. I'll find out what it's like to be completely unseen. Someday soon, Charles, I'm going to have a real surprise for you.
That was my first introduction to John's experiments. After that, for many weeks, he worked in secret. Then one morning, he called me into the laboratory and showed me a cage that seemed to be empty, but there was something scurrying about it, a rat, an invisible rat. To the touch, it was warm and furry, filled with life. But to the eye, if the light was not too bright, it was nothing.
Well, Charles, convinced now?
Yes, I'm convinced. You've succeeded, John.
Not quite. I haven't made myself invisible yet.
You're not going to try your serum on yourself.
Of course I am. Listen, Charles. Always I've been considered a freak. Now I'm going to turn the tables. I'll mingle with people and I'll laugh at them. I'll be their superior, able to come and go without their knowledge. Able to control their very destinies if I wish.
John, that's madness.
On the contrary, it's scientific fact. You'll see, because you're going to help me.
No, I refuse.
You're not going to let me down, your own brother. Well,
of course, John.
I knew I can get your help. Here's a hypodermic full of the serum. All I want you to do is to inject it into my arm and watch the result.
I tried to refuse, but John wouldn't let me. At last, I gave in. I injected the colorless serum into his veins. At first, nothing happened. As we waited, he removed his garments, for of course the serum could only affect his living tissues. Finally, the change came. His skin became paler and paler, until suddenly I realized I was looking not at it, but through it. After that, the change was rapid. His body seemed to fade away before my eyes into nothingness.
Well, Charles, what do you say now?
Oh, John, this frightens me.
Why should it? I feel fine. In fact, I feel so good I'm going to take a little jaunt downtown to see how the world looks to a man who's invisible.
No, you mustn't.
And why not, Charles?
Well, you aren't ready for it yet. There may be after effects, reactions you aren't prepared for.
Ah, nonsense. There's only one thing to be careful of. The tissues must return to normal within 24 hours. If the neutralizing serum isn't injected before then, death occurs. Otherwise, it's perfectly safe. So I insist, Charles, that I'm going on a little invisible sightseeing tour tonight, and you're going to conduct me.
Again, I tried to say no, but John was insistent. At last, I gave in. His was always the stronger will. We took a car, and I drove downtown. He sat beside me, unseen as the very air, laughing to himself. John, let's turn back now.
Turn back? I should say not. Drive to Main Street and park around the corner from the Watson Jewelry Store. The one where our old schoolboy companion, Harry Watson, works for his father?
Well, why, John?
Because I'm going to try an interesting little experiment. That's why.
John was in a strange mood, and I obeyed his orders with misgivings. I parked the car as he directed, and we got out and stood on the sidewalk, with the evening crowds drifting past us, completely unaware of John at my side. Suddenly, John spoke.
Now's the time, Charles. There's nobody in the store but Harry Watson himself. Come on, we're going in. Ask Harry to show you some stopwatches. Keep him occupied, and don't worry about me.
But what are you going to do?
Never mind. Just do as I say. Whatever happens, pretend not to notice. Come on. Open the door.
Oh, hello, Charles. Can I help you?
Well, I'd like to look at a stopwatch, Harry.
Stopwatch? Of course. They're over here. Here's a beauty, Charles. This Swiss chronograph is timed to 1/100th of a second.
I'm afraid it'd be too expensive.
Perhaps you'd like this one. It's American-made, and it... What was that?
What was what?
I heard a noise in the back of the store.
I didn't hear anything.
There it is again. There's someone back there.
But there can't be. There's nothing in sight.
Oh, just the same, I think there's someone back there. Excuse me. I was putting away some valuable diamonds when you come in, and I've got to see about them.
He hurried back into the shadowy rear of the store. I held my breath. If he should bump into John. Then I heard Watson cry out.
I've got you, you thief! No, you're not going to get away. What are you doing? Hey, Charles, help me!
John! John, what's happened?
Come on, quickly. We have to get out of here.
Well, what happened?
The fool bumped into me in the shadows. He was so excited he didn't even realize he couldn't see me. I used a paper knife I picked up and taught him a little lesson.
He's not dead.
Come on, we got to get out of here. Someone may have heard him.
We got out of the store into the car. As I drove home, John refused to answer any of my frantic questions. When we reached the house, he hurried me into the laboratory.
You've got to give me the neutralizer or make me visible again, Charles.
But John!
No questions. Here we are. Here's the hypodermic. You've got to inject it. Here's the mark from the previous injection. Now go ahead.
I pressed the plunger, and the drug flowed into his blood. For a moment, nothing happened. Then, like a man materializing out of nothingness, he grew visible. A misty figure that took on solidity until it was a man. John gave a little gasp of weariness and pushed me out of the room.
Now go on, Charles. You get to bed. I need some sleep. This stuff seems to drain away my energy. We'll talk in the morning. Pleasant dreams.
The next morning, I was having breakfast when John finally appeared.
Good morning, Charles. Sleep well?
John, look at this newspaper.
Anything in it?
Yes, there's something in it. Look at these headlines.
I see. Local jeweler kills, store up, $50,000 worth of diamonds missing.
You killed Harry last night.
Yeah, so it seems. Pour me some coffee, will you?
John, I don't understand you. You've killed a man and you act as if it amounted no more than swatting a fly.
Well, does it?
Of course it does.
I can't feel that way about it. When we were small boys, you remember that Harry Watson was one of my chief tormentors.
Yes, but...
I've always planned to pay him back. Last night, I decided to play a little joke on him.
Murder is hardly a joke.
I didn't intend to kill the fool. I just meant to make away with one or two of his father's diamonds. After Harry had had a chance to explain their disappearance, I was going to mail them back.
Yes, the diamonds. The paper says $50,000 worth of missing.
Oh, probably an exaggeration. However, put your hand into your left coat pocket, Charles.
My pocket? Dozen loose diamonds here.
Yes, I put them there last night. I couldn't very well carry them myself.
We must send them back at once.
Well, I'm afraid that might involve us somehow. No, we'll have to keep them.
John, what's happened to you? Overnight you've become a monster, able to dismiss the worst of crimes with a shrug.
Please understand this, Charles. For years I was an object of curiosity. I even had offers to appear in sideshows. Now the tables are turned. I can walk among men, unseen, invisible. That gives me a power that is very sweet to me. I haven't decided yet how I shall use it. But in any case, I won't have you interfering. Is that clear, Charles?
With that, John retired to his laboratory and remained there alone the rest of the day. It wasn't until after dark that he emerged to find me staring with horror at the evening paper.
Oh, Charles, what does the paper say? It made you look so pale.
The police found your fingerprints on the knife that killed Harry Watson.
What? Let me see it.
Here.
That's the police investigating the murder last night of Harry Watson, local juror's son, state they are trying to trace down fingerprints found on the paper knife used as the death weapon. They also admit they have discovered further evidence which they hope may bring about an early arrest.
They may be here any minute.
Ah, nonsense. Even if I did leave a print, how can they trace it to me? Talk of an early arrest is just bluff. And besides,
that may be the police now. If it is, what will we do?
Oh, it can't be. But if it is, let them in. Let me do the talking.
All right. Yes, what is it?
Mr. Charles Ordway?
Yes, I'm Charles Ordway.
I'm Inspector Long of the Homicide Squad. I'd like to ask you some questions, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, not at all. Come in. We can talk in the living room.
What is it, Charles?
John, this is Inspector Long. He says he wants to ask me some questions.
Really? What in the world about?
I don't know. I confess, Inspector, I can't imagine
what... I want to ask you what you can tell me about the death of Harry Watson.
Watson, the juror? The one we were reading about in the paper?
That's the one. Your brother was seen leaving the jewelry store a few minutes before Watson's body was found. Someone recognized him.
Why, yes, that's true, Inspector. Charles dropped in last night to buy a watch for me. But he didn't find quite what I wanted.
I'd rather hear him tell it.
Well, that's all there is to it. I looked at the watches and then left. Watson was all right when I left him.
I see. There's no one else in the store?
No one I could see. Well, I'm sorry, I can't tell you more.
I'm sorry, too. Well, just for the sake of helping us, would you be willing to let me take your fingerprints?
Well, of course you don't mind, Charles. You're thinking of the prints the paper says were found on the death weapon, aren't you, Inspector?
Frankly, yes.
Well, they aren't, Charles. I can assure you.
It's just a check. Here, Mr. Ordway, if you'll just press your fingerprints against this gelatin plate I have in this envelope.
Like this?
That's right. Thank you.
You wouldn't want mine, too, I suppose.
Well, if you'd like to add yours to your brother's.
Well, I was just joking. By the way, Inspector, how do you go about tracing down unknown fingerprints such as those of this killer?
Well, this is one way, and... excuse me, a cigarette?
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, you're asking how we check fingerprints. Well, we have several methods. The FBI records, Army and Navy records, and the one source few people know about.
And what's that?
Hospital birth records. For a number of years now, they've recorded the footprints and fingerprints of every baby born in this city. In the morning, we'll start checking these records as far back as they go.
Well, that's very interesting. Well, sorry, Inspector, we couldn't be more helpful.
It's all in the game. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night, Inspector.
Now, don't bother to show me out.
Did you hear that? They're going to start checking fingerprints on hospital birth records. And our prints were among the first ever to be recorded in this town. Father insisted.
Perhaps they'll overlook yours.
I can't risk it. But I'll stop them. I'll stop them somehow.
Hello.
Hello, and we are back here with a short intermission. As Dale got disconnected here, it looks like. So we are
okay.
Going to. Where are we at here? We are at. Let me go down here and I got to find number two. Scrolling.
Dave, did you notice the albino character cannot inject himself with the potion? Maybe this is why the Jack Kevorkian home kit never sold.
It never sold, did it? No. In order to have a couple of minutes left for some shameless promotion, why don't we go ahead and get right into part two? Because we only have about 2 minutes or less left. So let's go ahead and hit that and be back at the end of this particular show.
Not explaining, he hurried into the laboratory. 10 minutes later, he emerged, dressed to go out. His hat pulled well down over his face. And his face... What is it? Why are you goggling at me?
Your face, I can't see it, or your hands either.
Of course not. I took an injection of transparency serum. Now, I'm going to drive downtown, Charles. With this coat and hat on, I'll look like an ordinary driver to anyone who sees the car. When I get where I'm going, I'll take off these garments and leave them in the car. Then no one on Earth will be able to see me.
But where are you going?
To police headquarters. With that, John left. I heard him drive off. And then I could do nothing but wait. The hours crawled slowly past, and I grew more and more nervous. The clock was striking 11 when I heard John's key in the door at last.
John, is that you?
Yes, Charles, come here. I need you.
What is it? What's happened?
It's my ankle. I think it's broken.
Here, lean on me. I'll help you into the living room.
Yeah.
Look, careful. What? John, your coat's all bloody.
Yes, they shot at me. Nicked my side. It's not serious, Charles. Here, let me sit down.
Shall I call a doctor?
No. We'll tend to the bullet scratch in the ankle ourselves. It's a reasonable price to pay, considering that Inspector Long is dead.
Dead?
Yes, he fell from the window of his office on the sixth floor of police headquarters, while apparently quite alone in the room.
And you killed him, too?
Of course I did. I had to. Luckily, he had the paper knife there in his office. I was able to wipe all my prints off it. I found the photographs of the prints in his desk, too. I tore those up and I burned them.
How'd you get hurt?
I tried to slip out of the building again during the confusion that followed Inspector Long's accident. I'd reached the first floor when a clumsy cop bumped into me in a dark hall. He yelled and grabbed at me. I had to duck through a door and lock it. I got the window up and was just climbing out when he fired through the door. A bullet nicked me and I lost my balance. When I picked myself up off the ground, my ankle was broken. But I hobbled to the car somehow and, well, here I am.
John, what are we going to do?
Just sit tight, that's all. The evidence is destroyed. Inspector Long is gone. We're perfectly safe.
But suppose they have some other clue.
Nonsense. I've taken care of everything, you hear?
John.
What is it, Charles? The
car just stopped in front of the house.
Car? See who it is.
Yes. Police car.
Oh, we've got to act fast. They mustn't find me like this.
What can you do?
First, I've got to get these clothes off. I haven't time to take my neutralizing serum now. I'll just have to hide. They'll not find me if they can't see.
Oh, John, you're ill.
I feel weak. It's a loss of blood. It's nothing serious, Charles. But I may faint. If I do...
Yes, John.
I hide my clothes in the kitchen hamper.
Yes.
Then carry me down to the cellar. Put me in the empty storage room. Lay me on the Excelsior there. Now, if they look in, they'll see it's empty. They won't go stumbling around. Do you hear me?
Yes, I hear. But, John...
I... He fainted in my arms. I had no time to think. Swiftly, I did as he instructed. I carried him down to the small storage room in the cellar, placed him on some Excelsior in a corner, and hurried back upstairs. Already the police were pounding on the door. I jammed John's bloody clothes into the kitchen hamper, and then I hurried to the door.
Yes, what is it?
The police, Mr. Hardway. We're coming in. Bill, Joe, come on.
Yes, Captain.
The rest of you watch the house and see that no one leaves.
What is the meaning of this? I demand an explanation.
And you'll get it. Now, where can we talk? In here? Good. All right, please sit down, Mr. Hardway. I'm Detective Captain Belden. My chief, Inspector Long, was here earlier.
Yes, I know, and I answered all his questions then.
Well, now I'm asking more questions. Long's dead.
Inspector Long dead? But even so,
listen,
why...
Listen, Hardway. Long smelled a rat in this setup someplace, and earlier tonight, when he got your fingerprints, he also got your brother's.
But he didn't.
He got them on a cigarette case when your brother took a cigarette. It's an old trick. After he died tonight, we found the case in his pocket. Carefully wrapped.
Well, what of it?
In some mysterious way, all the pictures of the murder prints we took off the paper knife that killed Watson had vanished. But we had the negatives. We made new prints and discovered they checked with your brother's prints on Long's cigarette case. Ordway, your brother killed Harry Watson last night.
Well, that's completely ridiculous.
Is it? Okay, we'll see. Where's your brother now?
He's not here. He went away on a trip.
Hiding, huh? Bill, Joe?
Yes, Captain.
Search the house from cellar to attic. Don't miss a thing.
Right you are, Captain. Come on, Joe.
Half an hour later, I knew that further concealment was impossible. The police had not found John, but they had found the blood-stained clothes he had discarded. And in my desk, they had found the diamonds which John had stolen. I knew then I must tell the truth.
Well, Ordway, ready to talk yet?
Yes, I'm ready to talk, Captain. My brother did kill Watson.
Okay. Where is he now?
He's hiding down in the cellar.
Captain, that's the monarchy. We looked in the cellar, and he ain't there.
Of course you didn't see him. He's invisible.
He's what?
He's invisible, I said.
You say your brother is invisible?
Yes, that's why they couldn't see him.
Ordway, you know what I think? I think you killed your brother in a quarrel over these diamonds and buried his body in the yard someplace. That's how these clothes of his got bloody, isn't it? Come on, admit it.
No, my brother was wounded by a bullet after he killed Inspector Long. That's how his clothes got bloody.
Yeah, I suppose he was invisible when he killed Long, too. That's why nobody saw him, huh?
Yes. Don't you understand? He's discovered how to render his body tissues transparent. He's hiding down in the cellar now, invisible.
He's nutty as a fruitcake.
Shut up, Bill. Ordway, your brother is down in the cellar now. Huh?
Yes, he is. He fainted, and I carried him down there.
And just which room is he in?
The little storage room at the foot of the stairs, the one at the metal door.
How about it, boys? Did you look there?
Sure we did, Captain. We looked in there twice. There ain't a thing in that room but a little excelsior.
Right. We both looked. That room is as empty as a busted piggy bank.
You see, Mr. Ordway, if he'd been there, my men would have found him.
But he's there. They didn't see him because he took the serum. He made himself invisible.
All right, Mr. Ordway. Just calm yourself. Now, listen, my men say the room is empty.
Yeah, except maybe for rats. We heard a couple stirring in the excelsior, so we bolted the door after we looked in. Figured we might as well keep the rats inside.
You bolted the door? No, you mustn't. Captain, we've got to let John out. If he's not let out, he'll die.
I've met plenty of whacks, but this is a new one.
Yep, he's got it bad.
Ordway, I'm afraid you'll have to come with us. Now, will you come quietly while I have to put the handcuffs
on? No, you can't take me away. I have to let John out of that room. If he doesn't get an injection of the neutralizing serum inside 24 hours, he'll die.
Sorry, Mr. Ordway, but come on, boys. Give me a hand. Got to get him to the psychopath and walk fast.
No, you've got to believe me. You've got to let go of me. No, no, no. That's the whole story, Doctor. They wouldn't believe us. They brought me here to the hospital, charged with John's murder. And when I kept trying to tell them he was alive, they gave me a narcotic. But he is alive. He's locked in that room in the cellar. And if he isn't let out soon, he'll die. 24 hours is the limit, but there's still time to get to him.
Yes, I understand, Mr. Ordway. I'll see to it that he's released at once.
You mean it, Doctor? You believe me?
Yes, of course. Oh, attendant.
Call me, Doctor.
Yes, go get my car ready, will you? We're going to Mr. Ordway's home at once to release his brother.
Yes, sir. Right away, Doctor Harvey.
Oh, thank heaven you believe me, Doctor. You'll be in time to save John. You'll find the serum he'll need to bring him back to normal in a green bottle in the laboratory.
I'll take care of him. You go back to sleep now, Mr. Ordway.
Yes, I will. I can sleep now. I can sleep.
How is he now, Doctor?
Yeah, he's quiet now. He'll be all right.
You know, Doctor, sometimes I can't help thinking.
Yes, Johnson?
You know, he's locked up here at State Hospital for bumping off his brother. Eventually, they found his brother's dead body locked in a little room in the cellar. But I can't help wondering what the cops would have found if anybody had taken Mr. Ordway serious that night he was brought here 10 years ago.
This is the mysterious traveler. So John could make himself invisible, could he? But unfortunately, he did too good a job of it. For he hasn't been seen around for a long, long time. That's the trouble with having unusual powers. Sometimes they get you into unusual difficulties. Speaking of difficulties, you have to get off here. I'm sorry. But I'm sure we'll meet again. I take this same train every week at this same time. You have just heard The Mysterious Traveler, a series of dramas of the strange and terrifying. All characters in tonight's story were fictitious, and any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. In tonight's cast were Maurice Tarplin, Wendell Holmes, Roger DeCoven, Art Carney, and Richard Coogan. Original music was played by Paul Taubman. Broadcast engineer was Al King. Sound was by Hal Reed. The Mysterious Traveler is written, produced, and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. Listen next week to a tale titled
Bury Her Deep.
Another strange and suspenseful tale of the Mysterious Traveler. This program has come to you from our New York studios. Another program of tense and dramatic action will follow in just a minute. Stay tuned to the station for Official Detective. Carl Caruso speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Also, eBay CNA for joining us in the chat. That wraps up Mysterious Traveler.
It does.
And I have internet again. It's amazing.
Woohoo!
Hopefully I'll have some tomorrow for us to present another tale of invisibility. CBS Radio Mystery, The Threshold. This one's going to be really good. And that's at 6:30 Eastern. Now, right after that show, something happens at 8 p.m.
Yes. Marvel Hunter starring Garth Gold. Blah, blah, to you all on the Twitches.
Yep. That's at 8 o'clock, right after we're done here. And then no sneak previews of what Gar's going to do. He's going to surprise you.
Nope. Surprise.
It will be a surprise.
Always a surprise.
Oddly, in the 15 years I've been doing it, it's another movie I've never aired.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's plenty to be had.
Plenty.
If you haven't done it already, you need 5,000 fingers of Dr. T.
I'm aware of that film, and I haven't gone there yet, but I have to see. Tony Randall does everybody. Yeah, I know.
Yes. No, that's Seven Faces of Dr. Lowe. We'll see you tomorrow, 6:30 Eastern. Bye-bye.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
And him.
When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone. Can you dig it?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's the one below. Okay.
Ow.
Yep. There we go. Yep.
Only a half a second of dead air.
Wow, there you go. Yeah, I was like, hello. Yeah, and then Dave jumped in.
Bring your steamer trunks. Maybe within a month or so, or less, we'll be moving.
Wow, all right, yeah. I've actually had a steamer trunk before. They're kind of neat. They do have a smell to them, but
yeah, the older, the more smelly, I'm sure.
It had this metal rod that extended, and there were, and this, I was like really happy because it had all this stuff. It had these wooden clothes hangers that would fit on the rod, so you could extend the rod. And, you know, but it had clothes hangers in it. It had two drawers that came out of it. It was like, wow.
I would like to have one just to say I had one, you know?
Well, it makes for an amazing coffee table if, you know.
An amazing coffee table. I like old stuff. If I had an inexhaustible supply of money, I would load my house with antiques of all sorts.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to be that way, but then I ran across some problems with antiques. Where some antiques, you're buying more than just the antique. There's other stuff going on. Weird stuff. Crazy stuff. Odd stuff. Haunted stuff. Yeah, some kind of. In my youth, I enjoyed an antique store. Nowadays, not see me sitting my foot in there. Nope. It depends on what you're sensitive to. And it depends on where you put that. But, so, ran across the thing from Neil deGrasse. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Tyson.
And he was the one that actually.
You mean the guy who invented those chicken nugget things?
I think that was his brother. That was his brother.
His brother. Okay.
Yeah. So Neil deGrasse Tyson came up with this, and I actually borrowed it, but we didn't hear it, I think. If someone actually becomes invisible, the downside is not only can others not see you, you can't see them because you're blind. The way our eyes work, if you went invisible, you couldn't see anything, you'd be blind.
Don't start in 1 minute.
Really?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Show starts in 1 minute.
Wow.
It's stuck.
Yeah.
It's stuck. Yeah.
Is it?
Dale can't
Good
hear
it. It was your
right now.
Yeah. Oh. Is Dale, did Dale fall out again? I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. Just somebody I'll have to close because Dale cannot hear what's going on.
Oh.
So.
What is going on? I don't know if that's
apparently he's having some internet issues. He's still connected, but now all of a sudden he can't hear. So
I had internet issues last week in the live show.
Did you?
On Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I can't do anything. You can't do it. If it's out of your hands, you're sitting there going, there's a button I can press.